everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast.
Where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yes, indeed. And this is episode number 102, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about a book called Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore by Robin Sloan.
My choice.
Yes. Very entertaining book.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
I'm so glad.
I flew right through it. It was just fun.
And that's kind of one reason I picked it. Uh-huh. We've been having some heavy things lately.
Yeah, you know. Mm-hmm.
But also, there were so many things in this book that spoke to me that I kept going, other people love it too. I mean, it had advertising and typefaces and bookstores and computers and quests and epic trilogies and knitting and everything.
Wow. Just kept hitting it, huh?
Yeah.
So do you use Garrett Zune?
There is no such thing, I'm sorry to say.
No!
That was made up.
Yeah. I hate this book now.
Unfortunately, I would love it if there were. It sounded like a great typeface.
Yeah.
But actually, what's used on most computers is Helvetica or Arial.
Right.
Which is basically a straight copy of Helvetica.
Yeah, I suspected that it wasn't real. In fact, I think you told me that early on, but that there was. I can't remember the fellow's name.
Francesco Griffo.
Yes, there was one of him.
I looked him up because one of the historical characters used in this for the book's purposes is his name is Griffo Garrett Zune, who was supposedly a boon friend or companion of Aldus Manutius, who was real.
Yeah, and that was the other one, right?
Yeah, and that's why Aldus is the name of the software company, you know?
Huh.
Oh, I'm sorry. Fonts and... I'm sorry.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's why. Because he invented italic, although some people say his really good friend, Francesco Griffo, did that. He was the first one to use a semicolon.
Ooh.
He regularized punctuation.
Mm-hmm.
He invented essentially the paperback book.
Well, then I owe him a lot.
And this is italic, yeah.
This is Griffo or Manutius?
No, this is Aldus Manutius.
Manutius, okay.
Francesco Griffo was his basically the Garrett Zune of that's used in the book, the typesetter, who did a lot of these things with him, and they invented a lot of these things together because italic, and then I'll stop pontificating about type, but italic was invented not for emphasis, but so whole books could be done in it so it would use less space and less paper.
Ah.
Because the italics use a lot less space, and that would make books more affordable, as would making small paperbacks that didn't use a lot of paper and vellum and everything.
It's fascinating. That is fascinating.
Oh, yes. Finally, my specialized knowledge comes in handy.
Yes, I watched Helvetica last year, I think, on your recommendation. Ooh. And loved it.
Oh, good.
Who'd have thunk it? Yeah. Who'd thunk it? You know, a documentary on a typeface. And it
was
great.
Our kids both saw it and went, oh, I've got to watch that because picture the hellish life they had doing science projects and having us continually come by and go, that board isn't big enough. You don't even have the headline big enough. What is wrong with you?
And stop using Comic Sans.
I know, right. We didn't care what they were writing, but they had to present it properly. I'll tell you that's very, very true.
I love it. I love it. Well, what's this book about? Let's summarize
it. Right.
My name is Clay Janin, and those were the days when I rarely touched paper. That's the first thing I highlighted. It's just a page or so in.
Yeah. Well,
that's the main character. Yeah.
It's got a mysterious beginning, and it says. Lost in the shadows, I almost fall off the ladder. I am exactly halfway up. The floor of the bookstore is far below me, the surface of a planet I've left behind. The tops of the shelves loom high above, and it's dark there, up there. The books are packed in close, and they don't let any light through. The air might be thinner, too. I think I see a bat. I am holding on for dear life, one hand on the ladder, the other on the lip of a shelf, fingers pressed white. My eyes trace a line above my knuckles, searching the spines, and there, I spot it. The book I'm looking for. Doesn't that sound like the beginning or the middle of a quest type story?
Sure, yeah.
Or the Lord of the Rings, or you know, some treasure hunter. And this book turns out to kind of read that way, even though you don't expect it. Clay Janin has lost his job. He was trained in advertising, and he's a web design guy, and he can't find any job, and he gets less and less picky and has to use the actual help wanted ads. And he's actually, though, walking along one day, has nothing to do with the help wanted ads, and he sees a help wanted sign in Mr. Penumbra's 24-hour bookstore. And so after he's been there for a few days, he discovers that it's like there are two bookstores. One are the books for sale up front, and then the other is almost like this library of all these tall rows of books that certain people will come repeatedly and turn their books in and get new books for.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and so he can't figure out what are they doing, and two, how does this bookstore earn any money? Because no one seems to care if they ever sell any books or stock much that's current.
Yeah, and the bookstore itself is, like you were describing, you know, a little ridiculous. It's, you go in there and it's, what, three stories tall, something like that, and you get up there with a ladder. There's not three floors. It's just three stories tall. A big empty space that's three stories tall with a ladder to get at all the books. Lean, boy, lean. I remember him saying something like that.
When he says it, he feels like he's standing at the border of a forest. Not a friendly California forest either, but an old Transylvanian forest. A forest full of wolves and witches and dagger-wielding bandits all waiting just beyond moonlight's reach.
Mm.
There were ladders that clung to shelves and rolled side to side, and he says they were ominous. And so you start off feeling enchantment, even though it's just a strange bookstore.
Yeah, yeah. But then, yeah, it gets even stranger. Like you said, you know, he takes a shift, and he's got very specific instructions.
Mm-hmm.
He always works 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., and he needs to be there on time, and he can't leave early. That's part of his instructions. No, you know, not even a minute.
Oh, right.
And then he's, not only that, but he's asked to keep in a logbook. Every single person that comes in needs to be logged in the logbook. And when the owner, the Mr. Penumbra, when he was describing or telling this Clay Janin what his job was going to be or explaining what he wanted him to do, he said, you know, so what kind of buttons did he have on his vest?
You know,
that's the kind of detail that he wanted. You know, this person walked in and he had a mustache and he had bushy hair or whatever, and he was wearing a purple vest with pearl inlay or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the details. This logbook is full of that kind of stuff.
And the thing that's crazy is Clay then starts thinking about other things, but then he comes back and says the buttons were jade or something like that.
Right,
and you're
right.
Just like, no, he actually noticed.
Yeah.
He paid attention.
So he was a good employee.
Yeah, I guess so. And so he's interested in marketing anyway by his natural vocation. And so he's trying to improve the marketing for the store. So he's doing little real specific Google ads for people who are waiting for the bus stop outside. And he's trying to see about maybe getting some better books in. And in comes this girl who actually works for Google.
Yes.
And I've seen people criticize the book saying that the writer was in love with Google, had drunk the Google Kool-Aid, and I thought, you didn't read the whole book then.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because a great part of this book's charm is contrasting the old and the new.
Showing
that it's not either or, it's both. And they're two sides of the same coin a lot of the time. And which is one of the things I love it. That's one of the sayings about the Catholic Church where people will say, we're not either or, either this or that. We're both and. We're not And I wish I could think of a good example right at the moment. But a lot of times people say, well, the Catholic Church hates this and they love that. Well, it's always more nuanced than that.
Yeah, yeah. That's a nice point. I really like that point because I agree with that. Because, with Mr. Penumbra, he's definitely old school. And you have expectation that he will reject and be furious at some of the things that happen. But instead, he embraces it.
Yeah. One example is when he asks about if Clay has a Kindle.
Yeah.
And Clay says, oh, yeah. So he pulls it out, shows it to him, and he's like, amazing. And then he goes off and starts looking into it on his own, where you would expect him to just reject it.
Yeah.
To say, books.
Books are better. Yeah.
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 Exactly. And so Clay has done a computer program to help him kind of track what books these people are getting out. And he makes an interesting discovery. And when Kat, the Google girl, comes in, she sees his program running and fixes a little something for him in it, and they connect.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how much more to say, because it kind of, as Clay discovers more about what's going on at the bookstore, it leads him into further discoveries that really do turn into something that's like a modern day quest. I don't know how much to say.
Yeah, a little bit of a, like a code breaker thing.
Yeah.
But you're right, a quest. Dare I say Da Vinci Code-ish.
Well,
you know, kind of following the lines to where they end up, you know what I mean?
Exactly. And I think the author kind of did that sort of thing in terms of taking what we were talking about with the font people at the beginning. He took what was mostly true, put some of his own spin on it, created a character, and then comes up with this secret society who's very interested in Aldus Manutius and Gerrit Zune, the typeface that they've got there, their work. And what Clay and Kat and two other friends do is start to see what they can find out about it in order to help Mr. Penumbra with a problem that he's got.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads them into this really wonderful journey, I guess you'd say, of, I don't know, would you say partly the meaning of life in a sense?
Yeah, why
not?
I
guess that's Da Vinci-ish too, eh?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, why not? And I like how things like, you know, I mentioned Mr. Penumbra, you know, you could say that he's this stereotypical character, but he doesn't act that way. Which I thought was really refreshing. I was like, oh, here's the part where he's going to get really mad, and it didn't happen. And then you expect the happily ever afters and other things, you know, with all the other characters. But I liked how he handled all of that. It was refreshing, and, you know, it felt new.
Yeah, and there's an attention to detail in this book that I really liked.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the second time through, when I wasn't stopping to, you know, just kind of clutched up with the story and go racing through it. Like, for instance, Penumbra means shadow.
Ah, mm-hmm.
That kind of works.
Right. It does work. It does work.
Yeah. So,
yeah. And I, for one, loved the Google stuff too.
It was
fascinating. You know, everything, I don't even know how much of it's actually true, you know, or what, but I, you know, even from the very beginning where, you know, Clay is working, like I said, 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. every night, and it's a bit boring. So he, I highlighted this part where he created the Google ad. So he said, I sign up for Google's hyper-targeted local advertising program, the same one we used at New Bagel, which allows you to identify your quarry with absurd precision. I choose characteristics from Google's long form, lives in San Francisco, likes books, night owl, carries cash, not allergic to dust, enjoys Wes Anderson movies, recent GPS ping within 5 blocks of here. I only have $10 to spend on this, so I have to be specific.
I wish Google was that good on their AdWords stuff. I have to say, we've been working, running AdWords ads and kind of experimenting, and we say only responses from Texas, which makes the fact that somebody from Tampa has clicked through 5 times very annoying. My husband is currently in conversation with a very nice Google representative about that very thing. Going, you know, the algorithm is not quite hitting this. I could track the IPS. They're from Tampa.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I'm having to pay a lot of money.
And it costs you bucks to do that.
Oh, yes.
That is something else.
I know. So, that's where he's taking the concept behind the ads and using it to make the story really great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that. And that's how the girl came in through that ad.
Right.
She was like walking around or something, and somehow she got pinged or however.
She was waiting for the bus or something like that.
Yeah. And she, so into the bookstore she goes. I thought that was a cool moment.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, I don't know how much else we can say.
Before we start being spoiler,
it, because I really, really, really want to spoil it.
Let's do that. Let's do that.
Okay.
All right, folks. Yeah. Read it. It's funny. It's fun. I enjoyed it a lot.
It's light. It's an adventure book. You can also look at it as a book about books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a book about kind of about modern life in a lot of ways, too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I like that. That's good. Yeah. Cool. All right. Okay. So here we are on the other side.
Okay. So one thing I really wanted to talk about is the fact that the quest – that everybody's the two different sets of people who are all on one quest, Kat and her gang at Google, and Corvina and the Society of the Unbroken Spine, which is like the best name ever. They all want to be immortal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I found it really funny, and I guess you're supposed to, that they're all trying to get this immortality. But it's only how they choose to define immortality. They can only think of it in terms of living forever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I thought it was kind of interesting that one group, they think, you know, when they discover whatever it was that Aldous Manutius's or I guess it was Garrett Soon's secret message was the books, anybody who'd done one of these life books would come back to life. And I'm like, so that's magic. Mm-hmm. And Google is kind of a cryogenic, will store you forever, virtual reality kind of an idea, I guess, was what Kat was thinking of, which is also kind of magic because how would you do that? And the true immortality was something that everybody could understand and grasp a lot better, which is friendship.
Yeah.
Through your friends. Mm-hmm. And it made me think of the fact that I feel like I don't understand people who want to be immortal in that way, just live forever. I think that would be horrible after a while. I've never seen Highlander. Did he get pretty bored?
You've never seen Highlander?
The same thing all the time?
Yeah,
or?
Highlander. It's a classic movie.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm just not geeky enough. Please still talk to me.
Oh, all right.
I'm trying to up my cred with this book, please.
I'm trying to think of some other immortality books like Amber, Chronicles of Amber. Roger Zelazny really liked Immortals.
Yes. But they were different from us.
Yeah,
right?
They were. They were, because you'd live and people would pass away. But if you could be immortal and everyone else was too, would that be, does that make it more interesting to you or less?
I don't know. Would I not still have to pay bills and work a job? I mean, I'm just saying if we're not in a dream world, these people are dreaming obviously, but they seem to think it really could happen. And I'm thinking, how do they think this is going to be better? Because after a while, it's like people saying, oh, wouldn't you love to be a high schooler again? No, I've done that.
Done that once.
Yeah, it had good moments, but I don't need to do it again.
Sure.
So, but the thing, what I was realizing when I was thinking about this goal, which Clay also seems to have the same attitude toward, he doesn't ever say, why would you do that? He just says, I don't really care.
Yeah.
But if
yeah,
this is what right. my friend Mr. Penumbra is interested in, I will save his book. Yes. He should have a backup. I love that. It should be backed up.
It should be backed up. Yeah. I liked Clay's whole attitude. I mean, this is a sort of a good model on how, you know, everybody needs to get along. You know, he says he doesn't have beliefs, right? But he's living with everyone and accepting of everyone and, mm-hmm. Letting everyone be in a way. I just liked his attitude. You know, what someone could come to him and say, you can be immortal if we do this, right? And he's like, well, I totally don't believe you, but I'm not going to treat you like you're a moron. I just liked his attitude. I have one highlight. He said, I don't believe the immortality part, but I do know the feeling that Penumbra is talking about. So he thinks about it, you know, it's internal mm-hmm. to him. And, there's a lot of that kind of stuff throughout. I want to continue that paragraph cause it's beautiful. He says, I don't believe the immortality part, but I do know the feeling that Penumbra is talking about. Walking the stacks in a library, dragging your fingers across the spines, it's hard not to feel the presence of sleeping spirits. That's just a feeling, not a fact. But remember, I repeat, people believe weirder things than this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he even did, there was a dig in there somewhere where he said, you know, popes believe weirder things than this.
Well, yeah, but the thing that's kind of funny is what he winds up believing in as he goes through the book, he finds his own worth through his friends.
Right, yeah.
Two different sets of people say, you know, you're really good at finding resources and putting things together. And he goes, wow, I never thought about myself that way, but I have gotten good at that. Yeah. And so he gains confidence and is able to go off on his own and do what he needs to do. And he also is the one who brings all these very different people together. You've got Kat from Google. You've got Neil, his longtime friend from childhood, who's now doing virtual reality boobs, CGI boobs yes. and stuff for movies and things.
Right.
Who it cracked me up at the end where Neil's talking to the lady from the knitting museum going, oh, we could do an exhibit. This would be great because sweaters are the perfect thing to show off boobs. And she's like, what? Wait, it's so funny. And his friend Matt, mm-hmm. who really loves to do special effects the old fashioned way, no computers. Yeah. And of course, Mr. Penumbra, who also kind of straddles both worlds once he realizes the potential of the new technology. And so you've got all these people from all these different disciplines, but because they're friends and because they all get caught up in the same interesting idea of let's achieve this one thing, they're all kind of learning things about each other. They may not like what they learn. You get the feeling that Kat, you know, she's broken up with him by the end because she's not going to give up what she was looking for. She yeah. doesn't like the answer he gave her. Just like
that's Corvina right. And that was an answer. Interesting moment in the book too, when mm-hmm. she was just like, I don't like the answer to that puzzle.
Yeah.
And it really had a negative effect on her.
When Google couldn't crack it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
She got all those resources and Google could not crack it. There's something Google can't do. She couldn't really handle that very well.
That's right. That's right.
But kind of connected maybe with that part that you were reading, I'm not sure, was a part that I had marked where Kat is saying, I always thought the key to immortality would be like tiny robots fixing things in your brain, she says, not books. I have to be honest. I'm not sure books are the key to anything. I mean, come on, this is a cult. It really is, she frowns at that. But a lost book written by Aldus Manutius himself is still pretty important no matter what. After this, we can get Mr. Penumbra back to California. We'll run the store on our own. I've got a marketing plan. And so see, he just wants to get the bookstore going. And later she says, how can you stand it that our lives are so short? They're so short. And he's just like, I don't even care. My life is not short. You know, look at the things. It feels like an eternity since I started school and a techno-social epoch since I moved to San Francisco. My phone couldn't even connect to the internet back then. So he just, it's
and that was him talking, that last piece.
Yeah, that was him. That was Clay. That.
You know, as you talk about that, I start to think, you know, with the job I have now, mm-hmm. how fast things go. And Kat is like permanently in that mode. And he is working 10 to 6 at overnight at a bookstore that rarely people visit. So they are definitely experiencing life at a different pace.
Yeah.
You know, just like you were saying, old school or old knowledge versus, did they call it new knowledge or what was?
I think she does call it new knowledge.
Okay, so yeah, it's really interesting. I'm starting to think of all those dichotomies now. There's a lot of that in here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the great, one of the things I loved about the book is that it has all these characters who have really broken things up one way or the other. I do it the new way or the old way. And these ways can't meet. Now, Matt's not like that, really. Neil's not like that. But Kat and Corvina are the ultimate of that. Penumbra and Clay are like the bridges. They can look at both things and it's fine. And that's why I was saying the thing I loved is that the point that keeps getting made over and over and over is those old and new things are just different parts of the same thing. I mean, the point is made that back when Aldous Manutius was young, print was the internet. It was exciting. You were designing typefaces. I mean, it was the happening thing. And at one point, Mr. Penumbra, let's see if I can find it. He says to Kat, he says, "Dear girl," he says, "do you think Google will still exist in 100 years? And she says, "Yes, I do." And he says a rather famous member of the Unbroken Spine was fast friends with a young man who founded a company of similar ambition. And he said exactly the same thing. And Clay's guessing, oh, wait, Apple, Microsoft. He says, no, Standard Oil.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
Mm. And I just was reading, G.K. Chesterton wrote a book called Charles Dickens. Hmm. And let's see. I just finished reading it, and he makes a point there. I've got all these little cards, and I can't find it. Oh, he says, "The hardest thing to remember about our own time, of course, is simply that it is a time. We all instinctively think of it as the day of judgment." Like, you know, this is the end. Yeah, nothing's going to really happen after us.
Wow.
Or everything we do is going to – and I was talking to my mom after reading that, and I said – "I wonder what people will think about our time in 200 years. And she's like, And I said, "Well, let's think. 200 years ago, what was happening? It was 1815. Wow. Jane Austen was writing. Dickens hadn't even begun writing because he was much later. The Civil War was way in the future.
Yeah, it's hard to even imagine what it'll be like.
And Clay in this book says, well, it's okay to imagine what'll happen in 3012. This book was written in 2012. But you should, but you have to live now.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and that kind of brings me back to my thing about immortality is I started thinking about that and going, how the idea of immortality, that concept of just actually physically living forever or even virtually living forever sounds terrible to me. Mm-hmm. But then I realized that you and I actually count on immortality.
Sure.
It's completely different than what they're talking about. We're thinking about an immortal life that we can't even imagine what it would be like, but we're counting on the promises that this is what will happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would be different, completely different than anything we can imagine, and so much better than the best things that have ever happened here.
Sure. Yeah, so you're not looking at immortality of the same thing doing bills, right?
No.
Like you said.
No.
If I just do one more checkbook, I'm going to freak out.
Right? Yeah. I don't want to pay the gas bill again.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So, right. So Saint Peter won't hand us the checkbook.
Oh, my gosh. I hope not. I think the bill's been paid. Isn't that the point?
I think so, too. Way to go. I love it.
I just got to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, and there are those parallels, you know, a little bit. You know, he just briefly brushes against religion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But these guys believing in immortality, that's the thing that made me think, you know, it would be interesting to see how these guys kind of interact against that. And it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and Clay would point out these little inconsistencies that he would never point out to the people themselves. But when he can't come to the party Kat's giving, because he's got to work. So she carries the computer around. So it's like he's the disembodied head there.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's talking about, at some point, she's talking about having a drink, and he says something like, I couldn't help noticing that Kat's idea of a disembodied future doesn't really work with the idea of having alcohol, you know, drinking. Right. And then later on, she says something like, well, that was really great, but I wish you could have been here yourself.
Yeah.
So she doesn't realize that she's right there negating what she hopes for the future, because that's the only way she can imagine immortality. Hmm. It's an imperfect dream.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah. And that's kind of what we do here, huh? Disembodied voices.
Oh, I guess you're
probably
right.
Would be interesting to be in the same room together.
Well, we were giving that a shot for last week, but I know. It just didn't work out.
Not quite, darn it.
We were both in Florida about an hour apart, maybe.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Work and people and stuff.
Just stuff.
Just couldn't make it happen.
Not quite, but...
Someday.
Soon.
Yeah.
No doubt. When you were talking about people being bridges, it made me... There's one paragraph that caught me when I read it. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And now I kind of have context. It says, it turns out that Greg... So what's happening here is the Googlers are all getting together and with the book people to get ready to try and solve this thing. It says, it turns out that Greg, the source of Penumbra's mystery e-reader, is both a hardware engineer at Google and a novice in the San Francisco chapter of the Unbroken Spine. It also turns out that he is invaluable. He translates between Penumbra's bookstore crew and the Googlers, explaining parallel processing to one group and folio sizes to another. I remember reading that. I was just, it gave me joy just to read that. I thought that was pretty cool.
I know. But, I thought it was so funny that they needed a translator, and I went, well, okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But it illustrates what you're talking about. You know, two different groups of people, kind of old knowledge and new knowledge. Just interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Clay himself is the ultimate, I don't know, what do you call him? Not enabler, but somebody, yeah, I can't think of the right word, but he's gathering all the people together and
facilitator.
Facilitator. He's putting them all in the exact right positions to succeed.
Let's see, because he and his friend Neil played Dungeons and Dragons, I guess it was, or some similar game in the book.
Yeah.
He tends to think of this as a quest, which, as I was reading those little bits before, we can see it's kind of positioned that way. And so when he's getting Neil to come and help him, he says, well, we need a – was he a thief? No. But he said, you know, I'm the rogue. We need a wizard. I guess Neil was the wizard.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't recall.
We need something else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the four positions that they have. He kind of starts thinking of it all that way.
Yeah. But then at that moment, like you said, when somebody said, hey, you're good at finding things, or you're good at doing things. And he's
resources,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, he's like, really? You know, and then he gives him an impossible task. And then he solves it immediately. He's like,
right.
You're right, I can do that.
Yeah.
You bet. I just love that. It's cool. It's like he's kind of a magnet for people, and isn't even aware of it. It's like going through life without quite understanding what your talent is, and suddenly discovering it.
Well, yeah, and how does he realize it? By working with his friends to try to accomplish something.
Right, right.
And that's what the story of Garrett Zoon and Aldous Manutius is so great about. They kind of fed each other's fire for searching for great ways to do things and fueling that excitement about what they were accomplishing. These people do this in this book, these four people, and then Mr. Penumbra is caught up in it too. And the people who can't adapt maybe to it, I'm not sure, the people who can't really get the most out of it are the people who are too rigid. Just to be able to say, well, let's go with it. Let's see what we can do together.
Yeah.
I can, you know, I can learn from you, you can learn from me. And that's never put that bluntly, of course, but
sure,
that's what you see happening. I mean, that's how Neil winds up talking to the knitting lady at the end, you know?
I love it. I think that's cool.
Yeah, and of course, that's the part of the book which, you know, you were saying the author kind of rubs up against religion, but the thing that I guess he did a little bit, because at one point Clay says, you know, the whole world is just a patchwork quilt of crazy little cults. Because he's, you know, he's been at the knitting museum, and he's found, you know, the other guy who works at the bookstore is a specialist in antiquities, in archaeological antiquities, and he knows a whole group of people, and everybody's got all these special interests. And I was like, well, that's an interesting way to look at all the hobbies and little quirks that we have. And I kind of like it, because it, that patchwork quilt, it all still goes together and makes a blanket, you know?
Yeah.
But when the author is talking about Garrett Zune, he's talking about, Clay is telling his story at the end of the book, and he says, everything he believed told him, this is not important. There is no gold in the city of God. And so he keeps searching for what's important.
Yeah.
And he's doing different jobs, and he's going to all kinds of places because of it. And he's not denying that, you know, you have to work, you have to live, you have to do all these things, but he's looking for something higher. And I loved that that was never negated. You know, the author didn't come in and ruin it and go, well, he's not allowed to believe that. He let him be a man of his time. And so then when he finds Aldus Manutius, and they both kind of set off those sparks, those creative sparks in what they're doing, at the end, the message is, you are my greatest friend. This has been the key to everything. And that's the key to the whole book. And it's also the key to the, it kind of goes hand in hand with, there is no gold in the city of God. It's not about the concrete about things, gold, although those are very important, but it's about looking for something higher too.
Yeah.
Maybe that doesn't make sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. And you're right. And that's one of the things that I liked about the character of Clay. You know, he could have these thoughts, and like you said, that the author did not negate this stuff, you know, so, and the character of Clay, certainly did not. I liked his attitude.
Yeah. Cause when he's telling the story of Garrett Zune and Manutius, he's telling what their inner motivations were too.
Yeah.
He's allowing them to have noble motivations. It's not just about immortality. It's not just about this or that.
Yeah. Yeah, and Clay, you could tell when Clay revealed everything too. He was loving what he found.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and Kat wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought that was something else. Really well done. What did you think of the solution to the puzzle? I mean, how the physical solution of it?
Oh, I didn't ask Tom if that would be possible, but I'm sure it would, because those punches are, you know, although I think it's funny that that set of punches would have wound up in that museum with the moving shelves. Wasn't that weird?
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa.
Does that exist?
Tricky.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I thought, I find it hard to believe that nobody would have said, this is a really important set of stuff. But I guess that's part of the point, is a lot of these things get lost. Nobody knows what they are. You know, a lot of old antiques. That's how people come up with something from their attic and go, this picture was painted by so-and-so. Who knew?
How about that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And if you're good enough, I guess you could do something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I wonder if such a place really exists, if there is a big old warehouse full of stuff.
I wondered that too, myself.
And I loved how he figured out the right words to type. You know, they call it web foo or whatever. When you think of just the right way to search for something in Google and to get exactly what you need.
Yeah. Well, I liked the thing that made him think of it, which was, you know, he asked the little girl, 5 years old or something, how would you find a needle in a haystack? And she goes, I would ask the haze. And I thought, I had to read that 3 times the first time and go, what does that mean? Because he just goes, brilliant. And I went, whoa, what? I'd ask the pieces of hay where it is.
Oh, I'm like, love it.
Oh, okay. I get it.
He's a gatherer of people.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
What did you think of, oh gosh, I can't remember his name now, the guy who wrote the famous trilogy.
Yeah, I thought that was
actually
neat.
Yeah, a member of the Unbroken Spine, and he gave up his immortality in order to put the answer out there in front of everyone if they were looking for it the right way.
And he found it in an audiobook. I mean, this is just awesome. But, way back at the very beginning of the book, one of the first questions Penumbra asks him, tell me, Penumbra said, about a book you love. I knew my answer immediately. No competition. I told him, Mr. Penumbra, it's not one book, but a series. It's not the best writing, and it's probably too long, and the ending is terrible. But I've read it 3 times, and I met my best friend because we were both obsessed with it back in 6th grade. I took a breath. I love the Dragon Song Chronicles. And when he said that, I was thinking, Dragon Song Chronicles, is that McCaffrey? You know, I was trying to think if it was real or not, but turns out it's not. It's from it's a set of books. It's, you know, just in this book. But I loved it. And not only that, but look at what he says in a sentence, knowing what we know now. Mm-hmm. I've read it 3 times, and I met my best friend because we were both obsessed with it back in the 6th grade.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that just brilliant?
Mm-hmm. And then Penumbra says, that is good, very good. And he knows a whole lot then that we didn't know we knew.
Yeah.
But can you climb a ladder?
Yeah. I know. That's what makes him decide that, okay, you would fit in here.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that way.
Yeah.
But I also loved the point that in the audiobook, which he's having to play real time so he can get into digital, because there's only a tape version. Yeah. I thought, this sounds
again,
like
old
know,
school
right?
versus new school, right?
Right, exactly.
He's having to use cassettes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
He's transferring it to the mm-hmm. new technology, and it's new to him because he'd never listened to an audiobook before. And I love his description of, a book gets in your head, or, you know, it takes over your mind, but an audiobook is like pulling a fuzzy little cap down over your head that's all around it. And I'm like, it is. But what is so revealing, and this is perfect, is the way, since the author is reading the book, the way the author voices some of the characters. And he says it's not at all the way he'd imagined it, but it was very revelatory.
It was, yes.
And I went, I have come across that before. You know, it changes everything about how you think about something.
That's right. That's right. And then he realizes that he is doing Penumbra. He's doing an imitation of Penumbra as this character. And he starts to listen closely. And sure enough, he hears something important.
Yeah. And he's like, wait, and the villain is Corvina. I know that voice.
Oh, man.
And he also puts things in the audiobook that weren't in the real book. So there wasn't careful editing, but he's putting in extra hints while he's doing it,
mm-hmm.
essentially.
Yeah, the key line.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Which kind of makes me think of this series I've been listening to. I just finished listening to the audiobooks of, called The Rivers of London by Ben Aronovich.
Mm-hmm.
And they're urban fantasy, so please don't, please keep listening. But they're kind of like a wonderful blend of something is kind of in between Harry Dresden and Joe Ledger. And only a few people, I guess, will know what that means. But I need to do a review of them. But anyway, the way that they're read is so wonderful that after I finished reading the books, I tried one of the audiobooks and then went, oh, my gosh, now I have to listen to these all in a row.
Yeah. His finger was poised on the pause button of the Walkman. It's funny to think that there are some people who don't know what that is. You know,
that's so.
It's like, Walkman.
Hannah and Rose each had one.
Yeah. Yeah. My daughter did not have one.
Okay.
But we had something on cassette, and I pulled out my old one, and it was a novelty.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She said, this is crazy. And now she likes records.
Right. Vinyl is very
vinyl,
hot.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that funny?
It is funny.
Especially since people kept laughing at us because we replaced our turntable when it broke. And they were like, why do you even have that anymore? How can you even buy one? We're like, have you seen all these records? We don't listen to them that much, but we'd like to be able to. Sometimes
I can imagine,
must be played.
I can imagine what you've got. That would be cool.
It's really widely varied because Tom was hardcore music. So, you know, you've got The Who and all this kind of stuff, which is really, I think of as boy music.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have Linda Ronstadt.
All right.
And Steve Miller.
Steve Miller Band.
Yeah, that was my college days.
I was expecting a lot of jazz.
Oh, we have a lot of that, but a lot of it's on CDs and stuff. We have a lot of jazz. We have a lot of classical.
Nice.
From that time period when we first got married and went, we really should listen to classical music. So we bought a lot of it. And actually, I do listen to it, but not the way we hoped we would, you know.
Yeah.
When you're going to be a grown up. We do have a lot of jazz.
Nice.
Yeah.
I thought you would. That's great.
Oh, we have some, you know, Hank Williams, and we have some of everything, I think.
Nice.
Yeah. Asleep at the Wheel. Et cetera. Do you have a lot of records?
I have no records.
Scott.
I know. I got my first CD. I even remember what it was. It was Whitesnake.
Oh.
And I think I was in college. In fact, I'm pretty sure that was college.
Okay.
And then never looked back. I didn't have that many records to begin with.
Right.
And nope, so I never had a record collection to speak of.
Well, shoot, I got Beatles records, and so does my husband. My husband has Beatles records from England when he lived there.
Wow.
But
Alex,
I mean,
Beatles fan.
My first records from Beatles, you know.
I love it. Old technology.
Yeah. Old technology for somebody whose age is ageless. It doesn't even matter how old we are, right?
Right.
Because we're just on the computer.
That's right. Yeah, it is funny. That whole patchwork comment, again, you know, returning to that, just, you know, that's really what the internet has, you know, really brought out, I think, is a lot of people that have narrow interests, but on the internet find a lot of companions.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the best thing the internet has done.
Well, and it's made a lot of that stuff accessible. So when you start following these rabbit trails, you may come across stuff that you wouldn't have found otherwise. I mean, it's not like browsing at a bookstore, but on the other hand, you follow these links and you find yourself reading about stuff you never would have expected.
Yeah.
And you know, that's interesting you say that, because when I was looking at the Aldus Manutius page on Wikipedia today, one of the things that he did with his printing, he loved old Greek books, old literature. His books sparked a renewed interest in Greek literature, because he was printing these books and everybody started reading it. So it's the same thing over
and
over.
That's amazing.
Isn't that great?
That is really
and that
something.
Was the internet of its day. It didn't have to be handwritten. He was making it small and accessible.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Like Charles Dickens did later with his monthly printings of the different chapters of his books.
Yeah.
Which made them accessible to everybody.
And wasn't Socrates himself lamented the written word?
Yes.
Said it was going to screw everybody up. And now a lot of people are saying the same thing about the internet. And you always see stuff about how it changes our brain or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we don't.
There's always too much, right? There's always something that's too much. But the internet has been a huge enhancement to my life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we wouldn't have this podcast. Otherwise, my life would be much poorer without our conversations.
Mine too.
And, I mean, I was just listening to our Declare episode.
Yeah.
At Tim Powers. I know this makes me sound weird, but every so often I'll go back and listen to old episodes, and I'm surprised at how little I remember of a lot of them. But I was listening to – I know, that is really the worst. Shh, don't tell anyone.
All right. We're the only ones here.
Thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that it did was make me want to get a copy of Declare and reread it.
Oh, great.
But because I remembered, you know, I'd read it once for that podcast, and I thought, oh, all these things that we're talking about, now I want to read it with all that knowledge. And I probably would have gone, done, off the list, and now I've requested it from the library so I can reread it.
Fantastic.
So, yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and that's what the internet does. I mean, it's like, yeah, this book just really highlights that. And another aspect of the book that I absolutely love is how well everybody got along. The old school and the new school. Like I said, I've mentioned Penumbra and how he embraced it when, you know, a stereotypical character would have shunned it. But how they all came together and that whole scene with the Google folks and the book folks.
That
whole section, I loved it. It was disappointing that Google didn't find anything.
The big box,
yeah.
Cat did not like that. No, and it was. But it was also kind of interesting when they went, that second when your computer couldn't really connect, that was us using all the...
We're using all the things to try to solve our thing.
Right.
I love that idea. Yeah.
Well, that kind of what you said about the quilt and the internet and connection and everything made me think about something that I saw. It might have been Wikipedia, but when I was looking around about this book, there wasn't a lot of just regular commentary about it. There were a lot of people's reviews, but something that I saw said, all of Clay's associates are experts in building representations of the real world. You know, Matt is the special effects guy for movies. Kat does her Google thing. Neil does the, you know, the body torsos and boobs and stuff.
Yeah.
Oliver, the other guy at the Mr. Penumbra's bookstore, he's an architect.
Right. That's interesting.
I just kind of thought, oh, well, that's very interesting because that's, again, you need all those things. No, not just one thing, old or new, is going to do it. We have to have all those things. And they're all just kind of interesting, fun to do. Everybody's very satisfied with what they do, too.
Yeah, they are.
It's that thing, in a sense, it's what Tolkien would have called subcreation, being a subcreator. He meant with books and making worlds of books. But these people are all kind of doing that with the real world, with what they do.
Right, right.
So do we do that, I guess?
I guess so.
In real life? Do people do that in real life?
I think maybe yes. Yeah, that's really something. Sub-creators.
Maybe just us as people with our families and things, we're sub-creators in that sense of what it should be like. As a Catholic, I say this. You know that John Paul II called the family the domestic church. Because we make each other better, we help each other get to heaven. Even the things we put each other through get us for closer a lot of the time if we respond the right way.
Mm-hmm. He's going to be famous someday.
Fingers crossed. Oh, wait, he's a saint. I'm just not used to that. Not used to people. I almost said, no, I don't know him, but people that I feel like I should know.
Yeah, yeah.
Being saints.
Wow. Well, great. Well, thumbs up. Thanks for picking this book. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Has this author written anything else that you know of?
He has written a couple of short stories. Well, he's written one prequel short story about Mr. Penumbra coming to San Francisco as a young man.
Oh, I'd read that.
1968, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's only on the Kindle. And then he's written one. It's called a short story, but I think it's a novella called Annabelle Scheme. And I loved it.
Really?
And I highly recommend it. Yeah, it's really, you can tell his style, but it's to me very different. But it's got the tech and everything, but she's a detective. And the story is told by an AI that resides in one of her earrings so it can whisper in her ears. And it's in training to be her Watson.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's really a neat story. I love it. It's not that long, but it's really good.
Cool. Sold. Look at this internet. I'm clicking it right now.
Good. You must read it.
Yes, I will. In fact, I'm glad I asked that question. Because yeah, he's not a person that I've heard of before. But that's neat.
And this book, actually, I'm not sure, but I think it might have been a crowdsourced thing, you know, like a Kickstarter or some such thing.
Oh, really?
To get it started. I don't know why I have that feeling. I thought, he's got a website. And I think I was looking around his website and I feel like he was saying that there. Really should have made a note of that. But this was a few weeks ago. So this gives everyone something to explore.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great.
But I do like the way he talked about type and stuff like that really got Tom and me going because we live there. We love that stuff. And
that's neat.
So when he's talking about movable type and slotting it up into the little rows and everything, and I was thinking, I don't know if people realize that until – let's see, when did we start our business? 1988, 87. And so until maybe 10 or so years before that, I could be off a little bit. That's when computer-generated type started happening. But until then, all type was done that way. Every newspaper you read, you had to pick out all the little letters and put them in a row.
Wow.
Backwards.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then you had to put them all away.
Yep.
Every book, everything. And I was like, I don't think people realize how long that happened.
Wow. Yeah, it seemed, I mean, clearly, you know, once you have that in there, you can make lots of pages. But it seems like the only thing more difficult is copying it by hand, which is what they did before that, right?
Yeah, that was much slower. Yeah, but exactly.
Amazing.
And even that was a huge innovation over reciting long poems to each other.
Yep.
You know, like the Odyssey.
Right, right. Wow. That is something. Oh, cool. Well, are we done? Did you have anything else you'd like to say? Okay.
Do you?
No, I don't. But I did really enjoy this book. It's very funny.
Good.
There's lots of really funny moments.
Yes. And I know I keep talking about the quest aspect, but I think that was one of the really exciting things about halfway into the book. It suddenly just changes just enough and takes off in a different direction, I felt like, that I got really invested. And I was talking to somebody who said, well, for a book about books, it was pretty good. And I was like, okay, well, I saw a lot of reviews that would either say one or the other, like, oh my gosh, like I was, or it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Because that didn't just light them up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Right.
The same way.
Well,
and
I liked
people
it.
Mm-hmm. Didn't like the end, and I did want to read this one thing and then I'll let you go.
No, please do.
Since everybody's by this point, presumably. He says, you will hold this book in your hands and learn all the things I learned right along with me. There is no immortality that is not built on friendship and work done with care. All the secrets in the world worth knowing are hiding in plain sight. It takes 41 seconds to climb a ladder 3 stories tall. It's not easy to imagine the year 3012, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't try. We have new capabilities now, strange powers we're still getting used to. The mountains are a message from Aldrag the Wormfather. Your life must be an open city with all sorts of ways to wander in. And it's just, I thought, you know, he sums it up perfectly there.
Yeah. Well done.
Some of the stuff we know is little trivia and some of the stuff is big stuff.
Yeah.
It all matters.
It all matters, right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's neat. I like it.
Oh, I'm so glad you liked it.
Cool.
I just figured you were... That's kind of why I picked it. I was like, this has gotten my book. You're one of these people who would love it.
You bet. We are of the tribe.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Well, all right. Let's see. So next. Oh, yeah. We're going to go back to the shores of England. Or of the United Kingdom.
Something cheerful, I hope. Something light and interesting. I guess it's interesting.
You bet. Broadchurch, a short series of television from England.
Yes.
Yes. So we'll talk about that.
With David Tennant.
That's right. That's right. And I'm going to read. After I picked this book, it was funny. because up came that book in the book we just read. I'm just going to read a quick paragraph. It says, "But it's Grumble's newest project that has me mesmerized. It's a map of the locations of every science fiction story published in the 20th century. He's plucked them out with code and plotted them in 3D space, so year by year you can see humankind's collective imagination reaching farther. To the moon, to Mars, Jupiter, Pluto, to Alpha Centauri, and beyond. You can zoom and rotate the whole universe. And you can also jump into a little polygonal spaceship and cruise around in the cockpit. You can rendezvous with Rama or find the Foundation worlds."
Yes.
And there it is right there.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. So I picked Foundation by Isaac Asimov to talk about.
I'm looking forward to that. I've been wanting to reread it. It's been a long time.
Yeah, I saw that you reread a couple of the robot books.
Mm-hmm.
So, nice.
Yeah.
Great. That'll be fun.
Great. But this is a whole different thing, so.
Yeah. Well, good. So we'll do that on in a few weeks.
Yeah.
And then after that, you selected a movie called Shall We Dance. Is that
it's
right?
It's Japanese.
A Japanese movie. Cool.
I hope that makes I say that like, ooh, everyone should be excited. You should be, by the way.
All right. Cool. I'm very excited.
Oh, good.
Excellent.
Well, it's not animated. I think that's the only other Japanese movie. Oh, no, I guess Shower is Japanese or Chinese. No, Chinese. Sorry.
Nope.
I'm very confused right now.
Excellent. Looking forward to
it. Tokyo Godfathers is the only Japanese one I think we've watched.
That's right. That's right. And then you picked Valley of Bones by Michael Gruber as the next book.
Great. Mystery. Detective, supernatural, Catholicism. It's got everything.
Holy cow. Sounds great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I snagged that on my Kindle.
Oh, good for you.
Yes. So it's ready. New tech. Yeah. I'm going to use new tech. That's right.
That's the way to do it.
Let's see. I'm looking it up here. Valley of Bones. Yeah. Very cool. Yep, I did get it for the Kindle, so cool. All right. Well, that was fun, as always.
I liked it. I don't know how much sense, I'm not sure how this is going to sound to anybody listening to the book.
Well,
just read the book.
Just read the book, you bet. Yeah. It was fun.
Oh, by the way, one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
The cover on this book glows in the dark.
Oh, man. My Kindle glows
cool.
in the dark.
Well, it's really great unless you wake up at 3 a.m. going, what is that over there? It's got all these book spines on it in yellow, but they glow in the dark.
That's
so
great.
I don't know what the point was, but I love it.
I love it. New tech.
Yeah. New and old. That's right. That's right.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes,
we'll
thanks.
See you in a week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. See you later,
British
everybody.
Rich mystery. You okay, bet. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.